Hello, everyone, and welcome to our newest podcast. This one, we are going to talk about meditation. Specifically, we're going to be talking about the segment on meditation in the TMS Recovery Program donated by Alan Gordon. Now, I say that we're going to be talking about meditation, but really, as with all of these podcasts, it is just about whatever will cause an interesting discussion. We just want to have an interesting discussion. So really, the conversation can go wherever it wants, but as a starting point, we will use the section on meditation from the recovery program. It is one thing I want to emphasize, of course, is that you should think of this like a book group. It's just a bunch of peers who are talking about their own experience and sharing their own experience, what they have learned from their own recovery, or at least the progress that they have made in their own recovery, what has helped for them. So with that, I guess I can just summarize what we've got so far. Alan Gordon has added a section on mindfulness. I know he is a big meditator himself. And mindfulness is, my understanding, important to him. I personally have tried mindfulness, and I've found it very difficult. So I'm very interested to hear what other people's experiences are. Joy, have you tried mindfulness?
Well, what's the difference between mindfulness and meditation? I know mindfulness is a practice, right? But what's the difference?
That is a great question. So meditation is whenever you're setting time aside to do some sort of meditative practice. So that can be mindfulness, where you're just being aware. You can do a body scan. You can have a mantra. Anything where you are controlling your thoughts. Not controlling your thoughts, but doing some
quieting your mind.
Say again?
Quieting your mind.
Exactly. Quieting your mind. I mean, presumably there can be forms of meditation where you're not quieting your mind, where you're activating your mind, but yes, where you're doing some sort of practice to affect the way that your mind is working. I guess another form would be loving kindness, where you are focusing on your emotions, and insofar as you may be developing a sense of loving kindness, that might make your brain more activated. But yeah, quieting your mind is basically it. Mindfulness is something, is just wherever you're trying to be aware of the thoughts as they're coming in and...
like to be observant and watchful and alert.
Exactly, yeah.
Attentive, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And I think that the deal with mindfulness is that you can't control your thoughts. Or you have limited control of your thoughts or your emotions, and you have to have respect for what you're feeling. So a thought will come in, and for example, within the context of the recovery program, a thought might come in from your internal bully, and you're aware of that thought. You allow that thought to come in. You don't fight it, but you do allow it to go. You say, I don't have to hold on to this. So if you might be beating yourself up about something, you say, okay, I can let this thought go, and you don't force it out, because forcing it out typically doesn't work very well. But you also don't hold on to it. So you can allow it to be, you can be mindful of its presence without obsessing about it or kind of getting inside of it. I'd be curious, I know Stock Trader that you are in the chat room right now, I'd be curious to hear your thoughts and hear if you've done the Alan Gordon recovery program. I know that you've worked on the Schubiner recovery program. Another form of meditation, which actually my roommate taught to me, he is a lifelong meditator, is he taught me a walking meditation, where it is as simple as can be, and he can teach everything that I need to know about this walking meditation over the course of maybe 5 minutes. You just stand where you are, kind of relax yourself a little bit, and you lift up one foot, and as you're lifting it up and placing it down, you inhale, and then as you shift your weight onto that new foot, you exhale. And then with the other foot, you as you lift it up, you inhale, place it down, and then as you shift your weight, you exhale. And you do this very slowly. You don't want to be hyperventilating here. You just go through it. But that, I guess, would be another form of meditation. Anyway, Joy, I wanted to ask, so did you have a chance to try that in the program?
No, I've been busy reading medical books. I just started a book called Freedom from Pain by Dr. Peter Levine.
Oh, yes.
Started it, and he said something about we can't change our feelings with our thoughts, but our feelings can change our thoughts, which was a little confusing.
Yeah.
He said the only way to change a feeling is to let go of the thoughts and focus on each particular feeling as it passes or shifts to something new.
So that's really interesting. So do you see a connection to mindfulness in that?
Yeah, I do.
Yes, totally. Same exact thing. I think that in the last 30 years, mindfulness has become a very, very powerful force in psychology and psychotherapy research and kind of there's also this field called positive psychology where they're saying, okay, like we can, it's one thing to heal disease, but we want to make our lives better. And they found that mindfulness changes your brain, meditation changes your brain. Sometimes when I speak of mindfulness, I'll be speaking of mindfulness meditation, and that it makes you resilient and actually can make you happier in some sense as well. So it's everywhere. Mindfulness is spreading its tentacles into everything. Did you give it a try? What he was talking about?
Yes, and I've been trying to listen to the stillness in the silence and try to relax with no distractions and have a calm and quiet environment and allow deep feelings to flow.
I see. So using the kind of the calmness and the stillness to connect with feelings. I think
I'm trying to lead with feelings instead of thoughts because I tend to be more mentally oriented.
Yeah. Is it, how's it going for you?
Well, baby okay. steps.
Baby steps. I get you.
Surely. You know, I have to find my feelings and express my emotions more deeply. I'm working on it. It's an interesting paradox.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's good to explore these things. I also feel like probably the core thing of TMS healing is just getting out there and living your life, you know, enjoying doing that stuff. So I think it's good. I think we all want to get better, and so we all want to work super hard. Are you enjoying the book in general? I should give us a little bit of background for those who don't know Peter Levine. Peter Levine is the author of a well-known book called Waking the Tiger, from which a discipline called somatic experiencing arose. So I know Fran Anderson, the person who wrote Pathways to Pain Relief, she's actually a somatic experiencing practitioner. So she's kind of been, did you know that already, Joy?
Yes. In fact, okay. I just finished reading that book, but I hadn't read it when you were discussing it. But I just finished reading it. I had a little bit of trouble understanding. I had to read each page like twice before I got it.
Yeah, it's a challenging book.
It was. I had to look up words a lot, you know, so it took me forever.
Could you relate it all to the stories?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, they're good stories. I think the stories are by far the best part of the book. Yeah. Are you glad you got it?
Yes. Very good.
Did you get it in paperback or Kindle? I'm just curious now.
E-book on Kindle.
E-book, okay. Because everybody else, I think so many people are interested in or prefer the paper book. Like I think the adoption of the book was really slow. So in the chat room, Stock Trader just pasted in what looks like an interesting blog post. This is from Monty Heffley. And he has, I think as TMSers, we're so driven, and you can't blame us for being driven because we're in pain. when we're just starting out, at least, and we want to do it. But he has a nice simple version of mindfulness. So to him, a lot of the way that we lose mindfulness is by focusing on the past or focusing on the future. We relive things that went poorly, that we messed up in the past. Regarding the future, we're worrying about how we're going to control the future, everything like that. So his version of mindfulness is living just in the present. This in turn creates less stress, less tension, and I think there's some real benefit to that. I know I have a tendency to worry a whole lot, and I do have a tendency to focus on the past as well. And so I think this is a good invaluable.
Who is Mutt? Is he a former patient of Dr. Sarno's?
I don't know if he was ever a patient. Monty has been around forever.
Coach,
yeah, he's a coach. So if you Google TMS, Stock Trader, what do you mean by that? Stock Trader just threw out, is Bruce MC still in his 2-hour meditation as we are speaking? I think he might be. We're gonna have to ring him up. But I don't think he was a Sarno patient. I think he went through his own healing process. I think he did do a significant amount of therapy. He is a hypnotherapist, and he believes that hypnotherapy he's a very strong believer in the power of hypnotherapy. And he developed his own program, which focuses on it's a very what I would call a present-based approach, in that it focuses on how we are generating tension at every moment. And so one exercise which he has, which I like and I repeat frequently, is you draw a stick figure in the present in the center of a piece of paper, and then kind of like an idea cloud all around the stick figure. You draw, okay, where is your energy going? Where is, you know, right now I'm feeling stressed about this. You can think about it related to that mindfulness thing of, what parts of the past am I thinking about? What parts of the future am I thinking about? Where is, broadly put, my energy going? So anyway, he talks about a lot of the core Sarno ideas, and that's just his own take on it. So he's going to talk a lot about accepting the diagnosis and how that is absolutely core. That's kind of in his book, that's like the first principle is, I believe it's accepting the diagnosis. Thinking psychologically. So when you think psychologically, obviously that's closely connected to accepting the diagnosis. The second of his main principles is what he calls thinking clean, which is roughly put, and I'm sure he would take issue with this characterization because everybody loves, you know, their own thing, but roughly put, it's watch how your thought processes go. Do not allow your thought processes to create more tension. And then he practices something called, his website, as Stock Trader just put in, is runningpain.com. And if you go to the PBD TMS Peer Network's search engine at search.tmswiki.org, you can type any term that you want, such as meditation in there, or Monty Hoffley, and you'll find that we have an index of all of his Running Pain in updates, which were things which he used to put on forums periodically and on his own website in order to keep people updated. So, you know, they're interesting.
What do you mean by thinking clean? In other words, being positive, is that what you mean?
So that is an interesting question. Stock Trader, if you want to weigh in on this. So when I think of thinking clean, it's kind of thinking tension-free. It's saying, I'm
Be
going
safe,
to.
comfortable.
I mean, it's different from affirmations. So if you think about, if you try to think positively, or if you try to reassure yourself, I put that more in an affirmation.
Okay.
For thinking clean, I think it's, there is, I'm blocking on his name, the Four Agreements. In the book, The Four Agreements, one of them is be impeccable in your word or something like that. It's kind of like be impeccable in your thoughts. It's watch how you're thinking so that you you don't create inner tension. Clean up your thoughts in some sense. Clean out all that worrying about the future. And clean out all that obsession about the past. And enjoy life. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
Easier said than done.
Sorry?
Easier said than done.
Well, yeah. It's a practice. It's a practice. Yeah.
Now, who wrote that book, The Four Agreements? Who wrote that?
Oh, goodness. The Four Agreements is a big book. I mean, I was just using... Oh, Eric's joining us soon. Good. The Four Agreements is a book that Matthew N.J. likes a lot. It's by Don Miguel Ruiz. Pardon my pronunciation. And it's known as... he comes from an intellectual tradition associated with Toltec Mexico. So Toltecs are just an ancient Native American people in Mexico. And he comes from a wisdom tradition from them, and he's kind of sharing ideas from it. There's a great post that I found somewhere written by a psychologist, possibly even an academic psychologist, where he goes through each of the so-called four agreements, and he says, you know, here's how this could, here's how this idea appears in modern professional academic psychology. So while Don Miguel Ruiz connects them back to kind of this Toltec wisdom tradition, this other psychologist is saying, hey, you could just as well connect them to these modern psychological traditions. And I was just borrowing a phrase to try to explain what Monty means by think clean. So one of the four agreements, the four agreements are one, be impeccable with your word. This means speak with integrity, say only what you mean, avoid using the word to speak against yourself or to gossip about others. Use the power of your word in the direction of truth and love. I guess think clean would be, maybe it's stretching it, but you could think of that about be impeccable with the way that you think. Don't use your thoughts to create tension. Don't use your thoughts to worry about the past because you can't do anything about the past. Don't use your thoughts to worry about the future because, or to be anxious about your future or to beat yourself up because that similarly is not a good use of your thoughts.
I think I've heard what you're talking about. Are the other agreements something like don't take anything personally and don't make
decisions
and always do your best?
Yes.
I've heard that. I heard that somewhere.
Yeah.
I don't think I read the book, but I've heard it.
I mean, it seems like good advice, right?
Yeah, very good. Very good.
Yeah. I certainly, one can benefit from not taking anything personally, and assumptions aren't going to help as well. So there's a lot of wisdom in there.
In human nature, we do take things personally. Even if it has nothing to do with us, we kind of do.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I totally know that. I am totally taking things personally sometimes. And I notice sometimes that if I'm getting angry about something, Often it's because I've taken something personally. Or if I get into an argument, sometimes I'll get into an argument with my girlfriend, for example. You know, it's human nature. It happens. And sometimes it will be because I've taken something personally. In fact, sometimes I've noticed that if we have an argument, what happens is that she's trying to defend herself and I'm trying to defend myself. We've both taken something personally, and, you know, somehow by defending ourselves, we make the other person feel bad. So the other person defends themselves, which makes us feel bad. So we defend ourselves, which makes the other person feel bad. And it just goes on forever.
Well, the problem, Forrest, is men always want to be right and women don't want to be wrong. So you have to agree to disagree.
Exactly.
But
yes.
It'd be easier if you just said, "You're right, dear." Save yourself a lot of aggravation.
Right. Well, I wonder what Don Miguel Ruiz would say about that in terms of being impeccable with a word. But it does seem like it's going about we're both taking things personally, right? Like bounces back and forth.
Yes.
Yeah.
Does he mean like think before you talk?
So let's see. So it says be impeccable with your word. Impeccable means without sin, and a sin is something you do or believe that goes against yourself. It means not speaking against yourself to yourself or others. It means not rejecting yourself. To be impeccable means to take responsibility for yourself, to not participate in the blame game. Regarding the word, the rules of action, reaction apply. What you put out energetically will return to you. Proper use of the word creates proper use of energy. Putting out love and gratitude perpetuates the same in the universe. The converse is also true.
I mean, karma goes around, comes around.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it certainly it makes a lot of sense. I mean, when I hear that, I think of just like good old fashioned be honorable, kind of like 1950s. You know, be a good person.
Well, a handshake actually meant something. Now you need something notarized in blood and attorneys.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, like you can make the world a better place. I find in my own life that when I trust people, then they trust me back. And that if I'm kind to people and don't expect them to hurt me, they don't hurt me. So I guess that I kind of got that out of that next part about when he talks about not participating in the blame game, to create use the power of your word in the direction of truth and love. I think that's a strong idea. Yeah. When he talks about the agreements are kind of like things that we decide. They're conclusions that we draw. Another thing, I haven't really talked about the search engine very much on these podcasts, but it is a great resource. So one thing you can always do if you want to know what something is A, you can just ask me if you're on the chat and we can chat about it. I'll tell you what I know. Another thing is you can always type things into search.tmswiki.org. If you type think clean in there, you'll actually come up with another update by Monty Heffley, his take on thinking clean. Now, if you really want the way that I found that it works out with Monty Heffley's stuff is he puts out these running pain updates, and they're kind of teasers. They don't get to the core of his beliefs. If you really want to get to the core of the beliefs, unfortunately, you have to plop down $99 and get his package. You get a book, you get a CD, maybe you get some MP3s, you get a PDF of the book, and maybe you get something else I don't recall. But those are the main things that I recall. And there, in the second section of his book, he goes into depth about thinking.
Book, you mean?
Yeah, it's a self-published book. It's very slim. I'm not going to lie. You know, I think that Monty, a lot of people have said that they've been helped by this, and you know, I am of the opinion that that your health, both emotional, mental, and physical, is vital. No one wants to be in pain. So I think it's, heck, I would have paid $100,000 to get out of pain. So to some degree, 99 doesn't, I mean, if I'd had it, to some degree, $99 doesn't seem like a big deal. But other times you look at the book and you're like, ooh, this is kind of thin. But you know, if Monty speaks to you, then, you know, whatever it takes to get out of pain. Anyway, so he puts the main idea in his book. It's called The Master Practice. And he also does these running pain updates. And the running pain updates are on the wiki. And they have some insights in them. So there's this one running pain update called Three Strategies for Thinking Clean. I guess it's similar to Eric. It looks like Eric had to go because he signed out. Eric Watson, a.k.a. Herbie, who's sometimes on these calls, he's the one with a southern accent. Do you remember him?
Yeah.
Yeah, he hasn't been joining us for a while, but he's coming back. He talks about reframing, where you say, hey, I want to change my thoughts. And Thinking Clean has elements of reframing in it, where he says, Think Clean strategies that help you redirect into better feeling thoughts. One is called, wouldn't it be nice if? When you find yourself in worry or are in a complaining mode, so those are examples of not thinking clean, catch yourself and begin to redirect out of these patterns. Again, it's changing your thoughts. So you do this with, wouldn't it be nice if I had this all figured out? Or wouldn't it be nice if the body was open and free? This is a powerful strategy because it lessens resistance and let in the things or feelings that you want.
I'm not familiar with it, so I'm just guessing, but does he say anything about cultivating gratitude? I would think that would be part of it.
He might talk about cultivating gratitude, sure. I don't think he has. I mean, I know that cultivating gratitude has been empirically studied, and it's found to help people. I love the idea of right before going to bed thinking about a couple of things to be grateful for.
Oh, yeah.
You do that?
Yes. Yes.
It feels like that's almost a new form of meditation where, you know, if with loving kindness meditation, you can develop compassion for people you should also be able to cultivate gratefulness or gratitude. I think the key is that you can't force things. You can kind of suggest them, and you have to do it delicately, and you have to kind of learn about how your brain works. But, I mean, I'm sure that if you're not feeling gratitude, if you were to sit down and you were to say, I am going to feel gratitude right now, no gratitude would be felt, right? Nothing valuable is going to come out of that, so you have to be gentle. What do you do when you're trying to work on gratitude?
I make a mental list in my head of all the things. I have chronic back pain, but I'll say to myself, well, my arms don't hurt, and my legs don't hurt. I think of all the good, you know, rather than say, oh, my God, my back, I'll say, thank you, God, you know, that everything else is good. I have low blood pressure and low cholesterol, you know, that kind of thing.
That's wonderful. And you find it helps?
I do, yeah.
I would think it would. I think that's a great practice. It's interesting to hear you talk about that because you've talked about you've always struck me as someone who tries very hard to keep things positive.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe it sounds like maybe you're a fairly prayerful person. You pray, you know, to try to keep that positivity. And
I do.
It's kind of like your own version of thinking clean, right?
I guess so. I never heard that expression when you first mentioned. Think clean. I'm thinking buy soap. I mean, I didn't know what you meant, think clean.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think it's to some degree you just want to clean up your thoughts. I mean, he's got his own spin on it. Monty's emphasis is about tension. He's about where are you generating internal stress? So if you're not thinking clean, if you're worrying, if you are being anxious, if you're beating yourself up, basically, Monty's think clean is kind of like the opposite of the internal bully. When the internal bully is at you, you're not thinking clean. Because, you know, for Alan Gordon's internal bully and Monty Heffley's think clean, in both cases, you have thoughts which are generating tension and they are making your TMS worse. And the idea is to become aware of those thoughts and keep them at bay.
Can clean also mean eliminating the clutter? In other words, with me, orderliness is important to my emotional well-being. Because I'm a perfectionist.
It's kind of like, so getting back to the mindfulness and the meditation. Oh, by the way, so Stock Trader, I know that you're a meditator yourself, and I would be very interested to hear any topics which you'd be interested to cover in this, because we can absolutely do that. Because we're going a little bit far afield, but if you got any mindfulness topics, I want to hear them. So in mindfulness, there's this topic, this concept of monkey mind, where monkey mind is when your mind, your attention is like a monkey jumping from limb to limb in a tree, and you can just kind of see this tiny little monkey hopping around the limbs of a tree. Our minds can absolutely be the same way.
Scattered?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and going back to what we were talking about before, if you're trying to, I don't know, set the table, and all of a sudden you're worrying about, you know, you see a little bit of tarnish on the silverware, and you think, oh, I'm such a bad housekeeper. I'm messy, you know, I'm not doing this enough. Why didn't I do this before? That's your internal bully speaking, to use Alan Gordon's language. That's you spending all of your time in the past, to use Monty language. That's monkey mind, in some sense, to use meditation language. All it does is it just saps your energy and makes your life worse. Research has documented that those thoughts aren't any good. Using mindfulness to overcome those thoughts makes people healthier. It decreases anxiety, decreases depression, increases life satisfaction. And likewise, you can just change your thoughts. You can another word for a thought is a cognition. So if you're changing your thoughts, that's called cognitive therapy, and that's found that you can make yourself happier by doing that. And I think that's probably something which you're pretty good at, because you're always talking about thinking positively, et cetera.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. And research has demonstrated that that's helpful for a lot of conditions, but I think it's one thing which we always work on in the TMS movement is balance. You want to balance that with a deeper depth-oriented psychology. Sometimes there's also insights to be found. And that's actually something I wanted to ask you about, is you had mentioned that that you were working on, I think, now I can go back and rewind this if you want. I'm going to ask a question. You don't have to answer it. I can delete it from the recording if you like. But you had said that you were going to see a therapist before, and that was bringing up some issues, and that it was tough for you to...
But what happened was she was so mean-spirited and cruel, and I thought, okay, she's setting me up because she wants me to express my anger. And so I went to the follow-up visit about, you know, to explode, and something said to me, give her a chance to explain. And I'm so glad I didn't say anything, because she said, I have to give you extra time. Last week there was a sudden death in my immediate family, and she had kids, and it was like, oh, I mean, I was upset about that, but I was thinking like she was purposely mean to me, and it's
right.
It's when I go to the city, it's an all-day event, and, you know, I'm thinking I drove 3 hours to get there, 3 hours to get back, and then she just kind of dismissed me, and I felt like she wanted to be on schedule, and her next patient seemed more important than me. And
I know.
But then, and then she said, I have to explain, and then it was like, oh, okay. So I didn't have to lose my temper or anything, because that's really not me, and I'd have to leave my comfort zone. And but I wasn't being set up. I read the whole thing. Yeah.
Good to hear. Yeah. But the other thing that I it's interesting, because I was actually talking to someone else recently, another TMSer, who had another 3 hour commute, and what this person noted is they had a 3 hour commute to meet this therapist. And money was very tight for them, and they were paying out of pocket. And so they drive 3 hours one way, and I think that they're thinking about money all along, and I feel so bad for them. And then they have the 1 hour session, and they drive 3 hours back, and it's just, oh my goodness, that's I think that'd be enough
stress
to make anyone.
Stress.
Sorry?
It's stress on top of stress, because the therapy is stressful, but then traffic and the driving and worrying about making it on time and accidents and construction, so it's kind of stress on top of stress.
Yeah. So I'm curious now. But what I was actually bringing up was this idea of so we were talking about kind of the think clean approach, and we were talking about the deeper work, the more psychoanalytic ISTDP approach, and how you need to find a balance between the two of those. And I mentioned that you did all the positive thinking, and that seems like that works pretty well for you. I'm terribly impressed. I have to say, I am really impressed by you. Like, having talked to you offline, like, I'm really impressed by your resilience, and I admire that. I really want you to know that.
Sorry when you asked me to co-host. I just got stage fright. I was like, oh, my God. But I didn't feel as qualified because I'm still in pain. So I thought, how can I help others when I'm still suffering?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's I think you share your story, and I learn from talking from you. I mean, I think it's I love talking with you. I've mentioned before on the podcast that because my mother died when I was 9, I've had a lot of experience with psychotherapy. And, you know, when you talk about the positive thinking, I think it's another approach, which sounds like it's helped you a lot.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to say is that, you know, there's a time for positive thinking, and then there is a time for digging up the past and processing the past if you needed to do that. And I remember you said that it was distressing for you that you were confused. I remember you saying that you were confused about going to the therapy, and that you had developed all these habits of mind where you tried to think positively, and now you're going there and he's wanting you to go through all the muck.
It was confusing because I'm religious and I was always taught to magnify the good, and then I'm in therapy, and they wanted to just talk about the bitterness and the resentful and all these discouraging things and the setbacks, and it was like, wait a minute, this goes against everything I believe in, so it was just very confusing to me, because I was always told, you know, let go of disappointments and move on, and every setback is just a setup for a comeback, and release it all and don't dwell on it. And then I go into therapy. Therapy is new for me, by the way. And they're saying just the opposite. And it's like, oh, my God, I got to start in childhood. I mean, I'm 65 years old. This could take a long time, you know. I wanted to deal with the here and now. And they're saying, well, let's talk about your childhood. It's like, you got to be kidding me.
Right.
Yeah, so it was a little bit, plus I'm kind of a private person. And so all these personal things were coming up, and I was just having a really tough time with it all. But then I realized I have to, so I'm doing it.
Oh, okay. So you said was, and I'm really encouraged. But it has gotten easier for you, at least?
Yes.
Like, it's less confusing. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Good.
Because there's a method to the madness.
Well, I admire your resilience. The other person who I talked to you know, was it has this 3-hour commute and wasn't sure if it was working. And so I told this person to contact the therapist, and they
if
did.
It could work by telephone.
So what? You know, the people have strong feelings about that. Some people feel it works and some people feel it doesn't. And this didn't sound like that was an option for these people. I would work by telephone in a second. I would do Skype. But, you know, I don't think that's what they wanted to do.
Well, I think the therapist is looking at your facial expressions and your body language and even more than what you're saying, so maybe face-to-face is better.
Yeah.
Beginning, yeah. Anyway.
Absolutely.
Maybe they could transfer to the phone.
I know that a lot of therapists will allow that. You need to come to me for the first part. Okay, so we're at 44 minutes in. But it makes me sad that this other person isn't continuing. Like I kind of wish that they were, so that we could hear how it goes. Because I'm really encouraged that it went better for you, and that you've achieved a little bit more like a better place.
Thank you.
Yeah. Hey, Anne-Julie, are you there? Are you on the phone? We had someone call in. Is this her?
Yeah. That's you for a throat. Anne-Julie in the computer. No.
Hey, enjoy.
Hey, how's it going? Welcome.
Oh, it's going fine. I'm sorry I'm late. Terrible.
No worries at all. No worries at all.
How are you? Did you get the cataract surgery?
I did get the cataract surgery. Is this Joy?
Yes. Did it go well?
Yeah, it went really well. I had to go, unexpectedly, I had to go to the optometrist today, so that's one of the reasons why I was... I got off track, but he says everything's fine. So
that's great.
That's wonderful.
Well, we've even better late than
Thanks
ever.
Thanks for all your support, everybody. It was great.
Yeah. I'm so glad that things went well for your cataract surgery.
Yeah, it did. Thank goodness. It's nice to have that out of the way.
Yeah. Sure,
but my real excuse for not being here, I put on the chat, but I'm not going to say it in public. Oh, fine, I'll say it. I only looked up when Canada was obviously not going to win against New Zealand for the Women's World Rugby Championship. And I looked up and thought, oh, my gosh, it's 6:30.
It is easy to do.
Well, what a game. Holy cow, it was great.
All right, so we are talking more or less about mindfulness. We talked a little bit about Monty Heffley. Very glad to have you. And Stock Trader typed into the chat room a little while back. You know, I think that this is a... Enjoy wrote bad TMSer. You're a fine TMSer. You're a lovely TMSer, and I am glad to have you here.
I'm ashamed.
No, internal bully. No internal bully.
We gotta do it right.
Yeah.
Try to anyway.
Well, I will
so
say.
You were actually talking to Monty?
Oh no, we weren't talking to Monty. We were just discussing his stuff. But Stock Trader pasted in, and I want to make sure before the end of this hour that we get this in, because this, I think, is classic mindfulness. It is the core. Stock Trader wrote, these are the three elements I use all day mindfully. First, you notice anything in the mind without judging and react to it. Accept it just as it is. You look at it, you listen to it, you learn what it is trying to tell you for 15 seconds. I think that's brilliant. I think that when I've tried mindfulness like this, mindfully approaching feelings which come up during the day, the first thing that we need to do is we need to be aware of the feelings that we're having. We don't need to wallow in them, but we need to know what they are. We need to be aware of them. We need to give them time if they need time. Okay, so I'm going to tell my take on this, but I'm going to pass the mic on to anyone else who wants to say it, but to chime in, rather. So you first is you notice it without judging and react to it. Then you accept it. You say, I'm feeling this. For those who have been following along with us since we were covering pathways to pain relief, you know how important accepting your emotions are. They called it affect tolerance. And then you choose to let it go. That you don't have to hold on. And when you choose to let it go, in my experience, and stock trader, let me know if this is for you, it may take off or it may not take off. One thing is to say, okay, I was mindful of it, now it's got to go, and then you try to push it out. But there's this great phrase, what you resist persists. So the more you resist it, the stronger it will be, and the more strongly it will persist in your mind. So you let it go, and if it wants to go, it goes, and if it doesn't want to go, you give it the time that it needs. Is that what you would agree with, stock trader? Is that how you implement it? Would be curious to know. Does anyone else have any thoughts on that?
I'm not hearing stock trader. Is he talking?
Oh, stock trader is in the chat room.
Oh, okay. Because yeah. I didn't hear his voice, but I do see him on the computer.
And he just typed in yes.
Okay.
You know, this is the way that it goes. Different people choose to operate in different ways.
Okay.
This is being recorded, so some people feel okay having the voice recorded. I'm totally fine with that. Not everybody is.
Is Stock Trader a man or a woman?
I don't know.
Okay. I'm curious. No, they...
I think he has the icon of a male on the forum, but I'm not sure.
It sounds masculine, doesn't it?
His answer to whether he is a man or a woman is a dude. So stock trader is, his gender is dude.
Okay.
Indeed. Does anyone else have any thoughts on that?
Oh. Well, that's actually lovely. I'm going to think about that quite a bit. That's great. Notice, accept, listen for 15 seconds, and let it go. Like just as a goal. That's great. I try to be mindful all day long, you know. But I mean, it's so difficult. You get distracted so quickly by rugby games and so forth. And
But,
you know what? You just bring your mind back to it and notice what's going on internally.
What Stock Trader has written, it reminds me of stop, look, and listen, like if you're crossing a street.
Yeah.
Because you're saying notice, accept, learn, but isn't that kind of the same thing? Stop, look, and listen.
You just
well,
want to be
smart too. Actually, you know, it's a good analogy because if you don't do that, you get hit by a car.
Yes, I know. Well, then you won't have to worry about the pain.
You get hit by a car or TMS if you're not mindful of your emotions.
Right, right. That's true.
Yeah, I've been calling a lot of attention to Stock Trader's post because he's had some really terrific posts in the forum, and this is a lot of core, and he's also had a lot of progress recently, so I always try to look and see, you know, what are people doing that's working, and I think that perhaps going through the structured program, or just by reading a lot of stuff on the wiki and on the forum, he's made a lot of progress. And it's been inspiring to see. So I'm very grateful that he's sharing his thoughts for us.
If I could say one thing for us to people who are new to this whole TMS thing, I've been doing this off and on since about 1993, and also doing many other things, trying to move forward to heal and to be the human being I think I could probably be if I could figure it all out. And really, the key to it is you just simply can't stop. You just keep going forward. I mean, if you've got to stop one thing for a while, well, then that's fine. Try something else. But without that determination to keep moving forward, nothing is going to work. And of course you can stop and rest, you know, take a break and that sort of thing. But then you need to go back to it, because things don't heal themselves. You really do need to address them, and you need to think them through, and you need to feel them through, and we can gradually come out the other end. I think that's. I just can't believe how much progress I've made, and it's taken decades, but it's worth it. Yeah.
So when you say don't stop, you mean what activities are you saying to not stop? I want to make sure I and the rest of the listeners.
I think what I mean is just don't give up and say, oh, to heck with this, it's not going to work. Or no, I'm not talking about like I think that a lot of people just give up and drink too much, or they just give up, you know. And you can't give up. I mean, personally, I'm a person who does eclectic things. I loved the whole John Sarno thing, but I've tried many other things that have been helpful. Right, and I've always come back to Dr. Sarno's theories as being very, very core helpful things. But basically I did give up at times. I mean, I'd say, I even say to myself, why can't I give up? Why can't I just live with whatever internal difficulties are going on? And, you know, maybe I was in a lot of psychic pain until I was about in my mid-30s to early 40s. Mm-hmm. And I could easily have just said, I'm just going to do that, and I'm just going to, you know, live the best I can with it. But I couldn't do that. Every time I made a little bit of progress forward, it was progress forever, right? It changed my life in a tiny way, or maybe in a major way, forever. Mm-hmm. So, does that make sense? Because I'm not talking about any one particular system. I mean, if something works for you, then it becomes part of your arsenal. It's part of your toolbox. It's something that you can use when that particular thing, when it's right time for it to use. But there might be something else somewhere else that'll add to it.
So always believe in the potential for change.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. I think even sometimes I'm sure I lost the belief for the potential, but I just thought, well, I hope. I still have hope. I think, it's very important we don't lose hope, and that's something that the forum does, because you can get very, very discouraged by
or lonely,
Yeah, and lonely, exactly. And so we can encourage each other when we're feeling up and somebody else is feeling down. Then we can encourage each other. That's what people are to do. And so just keep moving forward. Don't say, oh, because I've met people who have quit, and they could be 80 years old and they hate everybody and kind of thing.
And they're bitter and they're negative and they're resentful and frustrated.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think the proper time.
That's your belief system too, Joy. And it wasn't mine in the beginning, but I'm becoming a convert to positive thing.
Yeah, I think there's so much. There's a lot that's helpful and valid in that.
I think there's a proper time for mourning, but you cannot allow a season of mourning to turn into a lifetime of mourning. At some point, you have to say, "I'm letting it go."
Well, and that's one of the things which I thought was very wise in Stock Trader's characterization of mindfulness. That's why I think the 15 seconds was valid, is that, obviously if you're mourning something serious, it's going to be a lot more than 15 seconds. But if it's, something minor at a certain point, you need to be aware, but, there is a season, and it, in my experience, it doesn't go on forever. I guess, what do you guys think? Does that make sense?
And another thing I was thinking about what Stock Trader said was that once you listen And I think just 15 seconds is just to say not, you know, not necessarily get caught up in that thought, but just, you know, just hear it out and then let it go. I just did that with a feeling that I was having, and it was a very positive feeling, but it was still the right thing to do to just let it go so that there was space, acknowledge it, hear it, let it go, so there was space for another thought to follow behind it or another feeling. So that, because that's living life more abundantly.
Focusing on the present.
Also, I think the universe is getting you in position to get you to a new level to your divine destiny.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Has anyone read the book? I don't even remember what it's called, but the lady who was a brain scientist of some kind who had a massive stroke and that destroyed the left side of her brain. Has anybody read that book? Does that ring any bells?
No.
I'm sorry, I can't remember her name, but it was very, very interesting. She said the right brain, you know, all she had left was the right brain, and she was not a person who had any spiritual beliefs at all before. She was a scientist, and she just, you know, wasn't into that. But she said after she had that stroke, it was really a struggle to decide to try and fight her way back into an ability to communicate with the left side of her brain so that she could talk to people. Because she said there's just a beautiful universe out there that you can be in, and well, anyway, she describes it beautifully in her book. And so she spent 7 years fighting her way back so that she, you know, she's certainly not the scientist she used to be. She's a very different kind of scientist. But it was wonderful to see that we actually have two sides, and letting one side completely dominate is perhaps not such a great idea. And I think that's what this is doing, you know. You're hearing the positive, you're hearing the negative, you're accepting, you're listening to it all, you're mediating, and you're talking to people from both those points of view, not just one.
I wanted to say, Enjoy, that I totally relate to what you were saying also about it kind of being this lifelong thing. You know, I think that you know, it's some people, they go through life and it's easy and everything goes smoothly. Other people, they have to work at it a little bit. From an emotional, psychological standpoint. Were you about to say something?
Sorry, what?
I bet you started to say something. I'm one of those people who had to put some work into it. And so, you know, you talked about psychic anguish early in your 40s. I felt some of that myself. And so it's encouraging to hear you say, keep at it. I think that is that is helpful.
Well, because you make progress, and sometimes it's slow, but it's still progress.
Yeah.
You're moving forward.
And it sticks with you for a long time.
Yep.
Yeah.
Forever.
There you go. Stock Trader in the chat a little while ago, he had written my ISTDP steps. We had briefly talked about ISTDP when we were talking about Joy's experience. I realized that ISTDP is much like mindfulness in that it teaches you how to get in touch with an emotion, to allow yourself to feel that emotion to some degree, but then to let go of that emotion, similar to those steps that he was talking about. Does that make sense? I mean, I guess when you do ISTDP, you feel the emotion in a really strong way, but the final, the later steps are just as important, you feel anger. Maybe you come up with some sort of violent image to accompany that anger. You kind of express that anger via the violence in a fantasy, just in an idea, not in the real world. But then afterwards you find love and you find peace. It's kind of like a more exaggerated version of mindfulness. Just a thought.
Is that Alan Gordon's thing? I'm sorry, I don't know what the letters stand for.
Everybody hates those letters. It's ISTDP. It started out with a guy named Habib Davinloo in Canada.
Wow.
And he,
cool name.
Yeah, Nicole. He started videotaping psychotherapy sessions and tried to figure out what was working the best in the psychotherapy sessions. And he just wanted to take those best elements and put them together and teach people how to do those parts. That's just, and so he was coming up with an intensive short-term psychotherapy. So ISTP, intensive short-term psychotherapy. It's also dynamic, meaning that it's dynamic means that you're looking at various forces within your psyche. And so psychodynamic, the word psychodynamic goes back to Freud, and he was modeling himself after physics, his idea of psychology after physics, where all the dynamics in physics, physics is called dynamics in some ways. Anyway, so he, the id and the ego clashing in the unconscious. So if you're dealing with the unconscious, that's dynamic. So that's where the long and confusing and frustrating acronym ISTDP comes from, is intensive short-term dynamic psychotherapy. Anyway, it started
it's
with...
not really very different, is it, in some ways from what Alan Gordon is talking about, with where you face down these... you face down some of the anger, you know. You let the anger be. You go. You move through it. You don't try and get around it.
Yeah. So Alan Gordon actually uses ISTDP, and he's been trained in ISTDP.
Okay.
And
yeah, I thought they were connected somehow. It's, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good. So he actually does that. Interesting.
The Dustin example is where he's using ISTDP as it's practiced in the TMS community. ISTDP is often associated with feeling rage, and so here's how the Dustin thing happens, as I recall it. Does anyone here remember the Dustin recording? I don't think we've done that section. But Dustin,
I think I've listened to it, but
yeah, he's.
I don't
he's,
really remember.
Yeah, it was tough.
I know. Yeah, I do. I do sort of remember it. Yeah,
it was kind of white knuckle for me while this was going on, because
that was heavy. That was his young daughter.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, sorry. It
was
great.
Great.
It was powerful.
Yeah, because, you know, believe me, I don't know if you're a parent or not, but we all feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And the
mm-hmm.
only people who don't know it, at least that's my opinion.
I agree,
At times, you just can't help but feel it, because this little being has taken over your whole life. I mean, your life is just... totally different than what you assumed. Even if you love the idea of being a parent and always wanted to be a parent, you don't have any idea of how demanding it is at times. And that little ego of yours, it just gets mad.
Yeah.
Wonderful
yeah.
that he was able to help Dustin to access that and get over that, so that he can, he can relate. He can relate and lovingly to that little girl, and realize when he's feeling that rage and do something about it,
yeah.
rather than feeling that he's a terrible father and backing off or whatever somebody might do.
Agreed.
Sorry,
yeah.
Rob.
No, that was good. Thank you. Really glad to have you here. In fact.
Yeah, that was wonderful, that thing with Dustin. I thought, oh, man, that is so, because obviously he was just repressing that as hard as he could repress, He didn't want to feel like that about either his little girl or his mother, but he did
yeah.
on some level, And if you don't know it and express it and work through it and let it go, then it's going to leak all over everybody.
Mm.
Rage.
So
rage, bad thing.
Amen. Well, it leaks out through pain is what it does.
Yeah, exactly. But it also leaks on the kids. He actually said in the beginning that Dr. Gordon asked him if he was as hard on his kids as he was on himself. And he said, well, no, not really, but they know that if they don't do things just right, daddy's going to be angry.
Mm-hmm.
Well, excuse me. You know, that's
mm-hmm.
not good.
Mm-mm.
You know,
mm-mm.
that's not good. I mean, that's a kid that's scared to death to set their foot wrong. That's
mm-hmm.
a TMSer in training.
Mm.
So he's going to get over that.
Yeah, as TMS passed down through the generations.
Absolutely.
But that whole thing where he was dealing with his mom, that was when you hear ISTP within TMS circles, that's what it's how we've come to think of it, where you feel real rage towards someone, possibly a parent, and then you act out something. You act out that rage in a fantasy, just, you know, in your head, in a way that makes you feel more empowered. Which, so you've had an experience which traumatized you, which made you feel weak. You've had a parent criticizing you, which made you feel weak. And so you act it out in a way that makes you feel strong by beating up the parent and showing them how angry you are. And once you've kind of gotten that out of your system, then you can pass through that to feel love for them. I'm repeating a presentation of it that I got from Howard Schubiner, who was presenting it about a week ago on Thursday for that webinar that John Strax did. And that's kind of how he presented it, that you feel... you had an experience where you were victimized, and you know we can all relate to traumatic experiences in our past, and then you kind of re-experience it in a way that makes you feel powerful. And once you feel powerful, then you can feel love for your sympathy for your aggressor. Perhaps Dustin was able to feel sympathy for the parent who was critical, because he had a chance to assert himself. Stop.
And the thing that occurred to me in the middle of all of that, listening to Dustin, was that I'm very glad that I ran across various forms of parts therapy, because then you can have part of your personality kind of rise above that and watch that rageful little being mm-hmm. just throw a fit, you know,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
say terrible things. And know that that's not the central you. That's a hurt little part that needs to express itself. So you don't have to feel like you're some kind of terrible person because you have those thoughts. You know
Keep
does
going.
That make sense?
It sure does. And it,
well,
it...
I think it's about the size of it. Yeah, it's just that there's the idea is that there's many different parts of us, and most of them, like our central being, who we really are, is you know, you can call it the self, or you can call it the soul, or you can call it whatever you like. It's the part that is kind of the umbrella, the part that it's you that runs your life, right? And then there's all these other split-off parts that are really, they're not full-blown human beings. They're parts. They're children. They're little kids, some of them, who were hurt at one point, and they went into hiding, and they're scared of life, and they don't want that horrible thing to happen anymore. They didn't have the skills to deal with it at the time. So they went into hiding. So what you do is you go in and you help them, right? So it works very well for this kind of rage things, because Dustin was so angry at his mom because she was hurting him at a time when he had no ability to stop her. Now, as an adult, he was helping that part of him that split off at that time become, feel heard, and come through that experience and realize that now, we're a grown-up, you know. Our mom isn't going to do that anymore, and we've expressed our rage, and so we can start loving her the way she wants to be. You know, we want to love her, and she wants to be loved. A much better experience once you have all that garbage out of the way that comes from when you were a little kid who couldn't cope.
Yeah, yeah. It resonates a lot with Pathways to Pain Relief, and kind of re-experiencing the past in a new way. Interesting idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Joy in the chat room just says, when you finally let go of the past, something better comes along, which is something we can all focus on.
Very true.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. So, oh, and it does, again, kind of connecting what you were saying about the parts therapy to kind of the central idea of being mindful, where you recognize that the part is there. And I don't imagine, and so going back to the steps that Stock Trader articulated, oh, boy. Okay. Did you guys just hear my voice saying, hey, everyone? No? Okay, because I just did, because I was trying to scroll up, and I started watching the YouTube tutorial that's above the chat room. Oh, that was weird. Anyway, but we can connect the parts therapy, the internal family systems therapy that Enjoy was just describing, to the three elements. You notice the part without judging and react to it. I would imagine that you accept the part just as it is, and then you choose to let it go. Does that kind of...
It actually that's a really good short form. In part therapy, you wait until the part is, you know, is willing to let go. And actually, you said that Stock Trader, or you said something of that kind, that you let it go if it's willing to go.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but if it wants to stay and it wants your attention, then you give it that to the best of your ability. I mean, sometimes, of course, you have to say, well, I'm sorry, I've got an appointment, you know, I have to go now and talk to you later. And it's, oh, okay, you know.
Right, absolutely.
You know, most of the parts are pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
They can't boss you around. You are in control. You
yeah.
are Forest, or you are Joy, or you are Enjoy. You know, we are who we are. These parts are damaged fragments, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To
but
me,
they still need.
Sorry, go on.
But they still need to be heard, because otherwise their influence is you know, they have power. They're powerful. They have powerful emotions behind them. And so, like Dustin, you know, feeling angry at his daughter and feeling angry at his mother and so forth, he didn't want to feel that way. That's not how he really felt in his heart of hearts. But, in fact, that rage would pop out, so it needed to be dealt with.
Yeah.
And he did that with Alan Gordon. I thought I was most impressed, actually, by that video.
Yeah, that was a good one, wasn't it? Yeah, to me, a lot of it comes down to emotional intelligence. And when you're talking about the parts therapy, about how you ask the part of you, is it ready to go, rather than forcing it to go? I think that's the key thing, is you have to be honest. You have to be aware and intelligent about your emotions. Are they ready to go or not? And recognize that, you know, you may have, you can encourage them to go by, you know, letting them go, but you can't force them to go.
Listening to them. Okay, and most of them are quite willing to go if you've been heard, if they understand that somebody's in control of this circus, you know. I mean, they think that they're doing a job that without it you'll die or something. Right? Once they understand that you're a grown up, you're an intelligent person, you have skills, you've heard them and you thank them for what they've contributed to your life, and you're perfectly willing for them to stay and have input if that's what they want. Oftentimes they'll just say, oh, no, I'd rather skip off and have fun somewhere, and off, you know, they just disappear. Poof.
Huh. You know, this yeah. reminds me a little bit of, like, when I hear you talking with those parts, it reminds me with the Eugene Genlin focusing, which was to some degree a focus of last week's podcast. We didn't actually talk about it that much during the podcast, but there's this guy, this philosopher / psychologist at the University of Chicago, Eugene Genlin, and he had this thing where, just as you're talking about, talking with the parts of your brain or of your mind,
no.
he says the unconscious mind is in the body. And so he has them listen to the body. You focus on the body. I assume that's where the word comes from. And you locate the feel, you see how it feels in your body. And then you listen to what it wants to say. You try to get a handle on it. You check and see if you got the right handle on it. And then you say, you know, if it's a sadness, you could say, what is the saddest part of this sadness, et cetera, to almost have that dialogue with your body in focusing, the way that you're describing having a dialogue with a part of you in this parts therapy. And it all seems to say, okay, if TMS is about is about unconscious emotions, which are striving to get out, and an unconscious brain which is trying to distract us from them, then it is worthwhile to try and understand what those emotions are. Whether it be by acknowledging the parts of you from what you're talking about in joy, or listening to your body, as in Eugene Genlin, and just being mindful of those emotions. Again, bringing in the topic of mindfulness this week's show, and acknowledging and listening to that.
Forrest, did he write a book called Focusing where he talked about the felt sense?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay, well, I loved that book in the 70s or 80s or whenever, you know, whenever I encountered it and used it. My husband and I do therapy on each other. And whenever we've got a problem, we still quite often actually use that whole method. And basically what you do, yeah, it is mindfulness. You go inside, and what we do is, I'm not sure whether this is, you know, totally in line with what this gentleman is saying, but it's what we do is we take all of our problems and we put them in a box. So in my case, it looks like a big warehouse. I go into a place that looks like a big warehouse inside. But you know, it can be anything else, of course. It's, you know, it's your fantasy. And I put every problem, like, say, for example, I'm having a problem, like the dog needs to go to the vet. So I put that problem with the dog in a little box, and I put it on the side. And then I find another problem is this, and I stack it on and put it in a box and stack it on the side until I've got a big stack of boxes in a completely empty space. And then I take one of the boxes, and I bring it out, and I bring the problem out, and I look at it, and I walk all the way around it, and I look at it, and I try and get a felt sense. And it can be a word, or it can be an image. It depends, you know, different people do different things. And then you think to yourself, now what is it about this that makes this so... whatever the felt sense is, right? And you use that as a tool to do the mindfulness, to really understand what's going on with that problem and what it means on a very deep level to you.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I find that very, very helpful.
So when you say you try to get the felt sense, is that felt sense in your body, or to what degree are you feeling just kind of going after the thing itself, the thing in the box, and just trying to feel that directly, maybe in your mind, in addition to in your body?
I think in many people's cases, it is in your body. I have a tendency to disassociate my mind and my body, mm-hmm. so I'm still working on the notion of looking in my body and trying to find where that feeling is residing in my body. So for me, it's usually a word. Usually it's a word for me that's just kind of floating in the air. You know, it can be, you know, like you say, for example, I think, well, I'm really upset about so-and-so, and what's the felt sense? And the felt sense might be sad. And I didn't know that, you know. I thought I was mad. But it's actually sadness. And okay, well, what's so sad about this thing? So, of course, it can be in your body, and in that case, you would go to, say, it's in your stomach, and you go to your stomach, and you say, what's this all about, you know? Mm-hmm. How are you feeling about this? Like, it's a very subtle thing, and when people first run into these things, they think, what? You know, you know. I'd be kidding, you know. But as you practice, you become better and better and better at knowing your internal geography and understanding the way your particular mind works and using, you know, using these tools to actually oftentimes quite quickly identify what's bugging you and decide, well, you know, what could we do about this, you know, and maybe choosing a solution to try. And then you can, you know, see if that works, and if it doesn't work, maybe you'll come back to this same problem a day or two later or a week later. But most times you find it just kind of goes, and the whatever bothers you next week is quite a different thing. Like you've actually resolved that problem.
Yeah.
So it's hard to explain it. You just have to kind of, well, get the book in this case, because it's a great, that's a great little book that you're talking about.
Oh, I'm glad you like it. I got kind of the audio book, which was very helpful, but it's also really helpful for me to hear about how you've applied it, because it sounds like exploratory mindfulness. Like you're saying, okay, I know there's something here. I know that there's something in my unconscious that I need to access, and I'm going to listen now. I'm going to go and I'm just going to be mindful of what's going on and see what it tells me. Is that about right?
That's about it. In my husband's case, he's not into the psychology stuff at all, right? He's kind of a mystic, and mm-hmm. he's a poet. And so we got to where we would say, he would be just grumping around, and we would realize he had a poem stuck, right? And what that meant was there was some knowledge trying to come through, but he was blocking it.
Mm-hmm.
And so he needed to work on removing that blockage, and letting whatever awareness was trying to basically mm-hmm. manifest itself in his consciousness, and then he could write his poem or, you know, paint his picture or whatever he wanted to do, because that's him. He's an artist. I'm not an artist. Right.
So did he explore the block, or did he explore the poem itself?
Well, he would always feel, let me think about that for a minute. He always feels, in fact, he did when we did this just maybe a week ago on an issue. He always, we referred to it laughingly as having a poem stuck. And I think maybe what you do is you just move through the block, you know. I mean, your conscious mind has, for some reason, this tendency to want to say, well, I don't want to think about that. I want to, you know, I want to do. I don't want to be.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so you have to say to it, well, yeah, but sometimes in order to do what you want to do, you have to be who you are. And so you actually mindfully go inside and look for the meaning of whatever is blocking you and bothering you. And then as soon as you know what the meaning is, the blockage is gone. I mean, you don't lose control in the slightest. You have far more control over your life. Does that make any sense?
I'm
probably not doing it. Explaining.
Yeah.
But it's a subtle thing. And there are people, especially there are people who have never done this before, and they think, oh, my goodness. And some people flatly refuse to try. It seems weird to them, you know, and they just feel like, well, no, you know, I don't want to do that. Totally their business.
Yeah.
And because, you know, we'd have a friend who's having a real problem with something or other, and we'd say, well, would you like to try this little exercise? And some people just do it beautifully, right, first time, and other people won't do it at all.
I tried it, and I'll say I had a little bit of difficulty with it. So I was trying to feel it in the body, and it just felt like, well, I have a tight stomach, but I'm not getting anything out of it. You know, like I know I'm anxious, but I kind of got stuck at anxiety, or I got stuck at tension, and I couldn't get beyond that, and it didn't tell me very much. Like I kind of wanted to talk to it. I felt like that was what I needed to do, but it didn't really talk back very much.
Well, I felt what happened with me. And I think with my husband too, is that once we understood the underlying emotion behind the anxiety, then that had a tendency to resolve it. Because once you know that you were actually, like I would, like in the example I was using, that you weren't just, you know, so anxious that you could hardly think straight. You were actually really upset and sad about something. Then you could, it was made that a lot easier to explore. Like, remember a few weeks ago, and somebody said, and I still to this day don't know if it was you or who it was, but I said, anxiety is TMS. It's just another way for your conscious mind to prevent unconscious material from arising.
I think Dr. Sardo said that.
Well, you know, as usual,
yeah.
It was great stuff. Like it still totally changed my life because I was having a big problem with anxiety until 2 or 3 weeks ago, and now it's just TMS. And I know that that most of my physical pain is not physical at all; it's TMS. And now I know that my anxiety is TMS, and I can literally just let it go because it's just trying to do something that, you know, okay, thank you very much for trying, but I would rather do it differently. I would rather do it mindfully.
Interesting. So when would you get like, so what anxiety symptoms are you talking about here? Like,
oh, jeepers. Oh, where do I start? I mean, I was a wreck. I was having full-blown, I was waking up, and I only had two, but that will do.
Yeah, sure.
Full-blown panic attack.
Oh, like panic attacks.
No idea where, I was having bad dreams, very scary bad dreams.
Okay.
Repetitive dreams about, they were almost always not being able to get everything right so that nothing bad would happen.
Right. Yeah.
Total TMS. And I knew it was total TMS, but the thing is, when you're asleep, you don't, you know, how much control do you have? I tried to do, okay, change that, realize you're in a dream and change that, but that wasn't very successful, and I wasn't getting any sleep. And then I had these two just complete panic attacks. So, I was a mess.
And you could treat those using the TMS. So you just said, this is just TMS, and thank you, but I'm done.
Well, I did Lucinda Bassett program at one time and didn't care for it a bit. But the one thing that she cost me $400, the thing that she said that actually did make sense is that she said it's just a panic attack. Well, I had never had a panic attack at that stage, but I had come quite close a few times when I'd been in, like one time I was on the flying over the Pacific Ocean, and I was 6 miles up in the air, and I'm looking up, beautiful sunny day, how far do you look? It's hundreds of miles in every direction, and there wasn't one speck of land, not an atoll. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh my goodness. Mm-hmm. And I really had to pull back and settle myself down, or I would have just splattered. Right? It was just, I don't know what it was about it, but it was just like I was nowhere in time and space, and it freaked me out. So I had an idea of what a panic attack might, you know, what it might be like, and I didn't want to go there. So she said, so I did it for various types of anxiety, and she said that anxiety is and panic attacks are exactly the same thing. And she said, you just say to yourself, this is just anxiety. It's all it is. It can't hurt you, right? Just, you know, just let it pass. Let it flow over you. Let it pass. And she would tell this to people who had panic attacks, and many times it was the last panic attack they ever had in their lives. You know, so I learned that from her, and but I had kind of totally forgotten that because I had moved on, you know, from her program, which I didn't personally find all that helpful except for that one segment. And then you reminded me that that's what Dr. Sarno said too, and so it all came back, and I was ready to accept it instantly, you know.
And so so you were able to say this is just TMS, and then not worry about it, and you could let it go.
Yeah, not worry about it. I mean, in the case of being asleep and suddenly having this wild thing, you know, I got up and made myself a cup of tea and just calm down. Don't worry about it. Just keep staying. And it would sometimes, like the two times that this happened, one was really severe and one was milder, it took me a while. It took me about half an hour of repeating, this is just TMS. It's just TMS. That's all it is. It's just anxiety. Mm-hmm. Nothing more. And and so knowing those two things, you know, within about half an hour, I was feeling fine again and haven't had one since and hope I don't. Because they really are scary. I mean,
No, but I watched some of the videos on YouTube. There was someone who was having a panic attack and did a video while she was doing it, and she was in a bad way. She was crying and sweating. It was tough, hyperventilating.
So you don't want to let these things get the upper hand.
Yeah,
you know, you need to remember that they're just a small part of you that's having a fit about something, and it'll be okay. You know, you can just let it pass.
Yeah.
As long as you're not on a freeway or something, it's not going to hurt you.
Enjoy. If you experience another panic attack, if you can open a window, more oxygen will calm you down.
Oh good.
Thank you.
That's wonderful. Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Cool.
I'll
remember that.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, especially when you're asleep, you're kind of cocooning a bit and you're not getting proper oxygen.
Exactly.
No. All right. Well, thank you, everyone.
This has
been wonderful. I think it's Joy had identified some wisdom that Stock Trader shared in the chat room. I think this is very, very important. I think that he wrote, while healing from TMS, it's important not to try to heal. Just go about your daily life, do things you want to do, head in a new direction, let more go. And letting go is something that Monty focuses on. We talked about Monty earlier in the podcast. It's okay to be a work in progress. You take the message from the TMS, and you don't have to work that much about it. I think we are all such driven people, and we all want to get better, that we're like, am I doing enough? You are totally fine.
I am really glad to hear him say that, because I certainly didn't want to say that you should TMS about your TMS.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Just live your life and be happy. But I'm just saying, you know, don't give up, because there's that light at the end of the tunnel is not a train.
There's potential and hope.
Yeah.
Yep. And these discussion groups are there for sharing ideas. You know, if you hear an idea that you like in here, by all means, run with it. Maybe you'll achieve some of that hope. But don't feel like you got to do everything here. Pick and choose what you find interesting and what speaks to you. And just remember, you've got a lot of tension in your brain, and the cool thing is, or the best thing to do is to let go of that tension. Dr. Sarno is well known for saying things like, relax, go to bed early, have a glass of wine. And I think that perspective is very, very valuable. Keep things
so wise, because we have a tendency to be very intense people.
Exactly.
And that's probably why we are who we are. And it's a good thing, but mm-hmm. we need to learn to be able to let go.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Been lovely.
I will, in the forum post, in the official forum post, I'll say which sections we want to do next. It will be the next several sections. I think that they're the ones right before the section on meditation. But we can look at that and confirm it later. Well, okay, I can't resist. I'm loading the page now. Let's do recognizing destructive behaviors and identifying the source of abuse. That'll be it for next week.
That's great. Looking forward to it.
Thanks so much for joining us. Talk to you later.
Well, Miss, thanks
for being here.
Bye, Andrew. Bye, Boris.
All right. Talk to you later.